Hello and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. Today's episode is going to be a little different. As most of the Houston innovation ecosystem might have known, last week was Houston Tech Rodeo. Houston Exponential and its partners put on 7 days worth of programming, including panels and networking opportunities across industries from energy and health tech to aerospace and the future of work. I had the pleasure of moderating a panel between two individuals within the healthcare space in Houston, Roberta Schwartz of Houston Methodist and Dr. Roderick Pettigrew of Texas A&M's NMED program. In the fireside chat, we discussed the future of health innovation in Houston and beyond. Please enjoy the enlightening conversation we had, and thank you to Houston Methodist for the recording of the event.
Good morning, everyone. I think we're going to go ahead and get started. Thanks, everyone, for being here and kicking off the day of exciting conversations. I'm Natalie Harms. I am the editor of Innovation Map. And Innovation Map is a media site completely dedicated to Houston innovation. So I'm excited to be here today and covering Tech Rodeo. It's been a busy week, so thanks for joining. As many of you know, innovation is in constant evolution. And I know our speakers today are going to touch on this. This morning is focused on great conversations, and this first session is going to cover the state of healthcare innovation in Houston. So I'm going to briefly introduce our two guests here, and I'm going to read it lest I forget anything about them in their introduction. So Roberta Schwartz is Executive Vice President and Chief Innovation Officer at Houston Methodist Hospital, one of Texas Medical Center's founding institutions. She is responsible for overseeing all operations at the 924-bed hospital. And in her role as Chief Innovation Officer for the healthcare system, she is responsible for advancing and expanding Houston Methodist's digital innovation platforms, including telemedicine, artificial intelligence, and big data. So thanks for joining us today. Our second panelist is Dr. Roderick Pettigrew, the Robert A. Welch Professor of Medicine, CEO of Engineering Health in Med, and inaugural dean of InHealth, and inaugural dean of the School of Engineering Medicine at Texas A&M, which offers the InMed program with Houston Methodist Hospital, where he is adjunct professor of nanomedicine and radiology. And for those unfamiliar with InHealth, it's the world's first initiative to holistically integrate engineering into medical training to develop a new kind of innovation-minded physician, the physicianeer. I love that. Love a good wordplay. Who invents solutions to healthcare problems. So welcome, Dr. Roderick Pettigrew. So just to kick things off, I want to start with a question for you both. What motivated Houston Methodist and Texas A&M InMed to sponsor the Houston Tech Rodeo Health and MedTech Salon? Saloon.
For us, you know, technology is has been like our whole history. I mean, when you really look at where we have been in kind of this, you know, our tagline, right, leading medicine, it has been pushing the envelope. And whether that's pushing the envelope on medical devices, whether it's pushing the envelope on new innovations or now on digital medicine, it's really easy. And I look out in the audience, and this is exactly what you want, right? You want the next generation to get equally as excited about what's happening in that world and realize how much opportunity there is to disrupt the field of healthcare. And I think so. It's so natural for us at Houston Methodist to kind of say, please, please come along, see the opportunities that there are and seize them and kind of move it forward. So it's a very easy decision.
When you consider scientific progress throughout history and in the future, you realize that technological innovation is really the engine of scientific progress. It has been in the past and it will be going forward. We are seated here now in this building that's a part of a 3-building complex that has been aptly named Innovation Plaza. the InMed building is the first building in Innovation Plaza. In this plaza, we will have co-location of places to live, work and play, and more importantly, to have the kinds of random collisions between bright minds who are coming and going between scheduled educational activities, and then those activities that occur serendipitously. And those kinds of touch points happen in a place like this, where you have co-location of research, education, and social activities. So having the Tech Rodeo come here at this location is a natural, because I view this as a crucible of innovation now and certainly in the future.
Well, this is my first time here after writing about the building, so it's exciting for me to see it and to see all the construction going on in the future of where that's going. So, Roberta, going back to you, you assumed the role of Chief Innovation Officer in 2018. And as you mentioned before, Houston Methodist lives and breathes this innovation, leading healthcare initiatives within the space. So what are your goals in the upcoming year or two to innovate in healthcare?
You know, I think it'll be fun to, you know, talk to Dr. Pettigrew and go back and forth on some of these fun initiatives. I think we've just finished a presentation and all, we were just having this conversation about our next smart hospital. And we present that next week at what's called VIVE, which is a big conference going on in Miami, came out of an organization called Health, aptly spelled H-L-T-H, because, you know, we got to be different. You know, we can't do anything normally in the innovation space. So. And it was really fun because the presentation, I'm going to call a labor of love, because it has taken far more hours than I feel like I've ever spent on any presentation possibly in my existence. But we got all of a month to do it. And the month was really spent thinking about where we've come in a very short time in innovation in the digital space. And how far and how quickly we will get to the next stages. And I take that, you know, if you think about it, the iPhone that you have sitting in your pocket, for all of you who, you know, are on the iPhone, which if you look around should be about 70% of the audience, is 10 years old, right? We think about it as if it has existed for our entire lives because we're obsessed and can't put it down. But if you think about it, it's new technology. And it has, you know, when we now say mobile first, we have revolutionized everything about our lives, the way we shop, the way we get our groceries, the way we book our appointments. Everything that we do is 10 years old. Telemedicine actually existed when I was 30 years ago when I started the field. The only thing we did telemedicine for at that point was really looking at rural communities and communities that couldn't come. And there were these huge things, actually UTMB, nod to them, did it in the jails, right? So, I mean, it existed, but it did not exist in your living room. And it certainly did not exist from one area of our hospital to the other area of our hospital. Biosensors and the ability for you to do your EKG on your iPhone, you know, let alone a bracelet, is 2 years old. Big data, though we pretend that it is there, it's not there. Like, right, it's in its infancy. It will be there, but it's in its infancy. That means that in your lifetime of the next, you know, for those of you going into engineering and those of you going into medicine, and those of you already in the field, I already have sitting all the way to the left, hiding off in the corner, is my chair of cardiovascular surgery. God bless any of you who can keep up with that man. his vision, you know, goes like a mile a minute, and it's like nearly impossible, right? So the question is, what are the visions that you're going to create? And then with the amount of information, technology, digital innovations, and what's going to happen, what can we recreate in the field of medicine and healthcare providing to consumers that is going to change our existence? And I think that that is, you know, that is where the Center for Innovation came out of. I mean, it started from one stupid speech I made. And let's not call it stupid, because it ultimately led to what we have today, which is really exciting, where I stood up in front of my director group, because, you know, each year I get up in January and I say where I think the future year is going to be. And I stood up and said, a lot of your jobs I don't think are going to exist in the way they are today in 5 years. Right? And I had a whole bunch of people come up to me after that speech and go, I'm both freaked out and excited. Right? And that's the question, is what are the jobs that are going to exist in 10 years that don't exist today? And what is our future going to look like? And I think that's what the Center for Innovation is all about. And we limit ourselves, right? We try to box ourselves in with, you know, those, you know, in the bowling lane, put up those side rails for me. We are not everything. We are looking at the digital technologies because we think that's the ones that'll go the most quickly with the quickest runway. And I think that's where I think we need to get excited about.
It is exciting to talk about the future of technology within healthcare and the future jobs within healthcare. And one of them I mentioned earlier, the physicianeer, right? So Dr. Pettigrew, will you tell us about EnMed and how you describe this novel and up-and-coming field?
Again, I think it's useful to start with our overarching motivation. What are we trying to do? What are we here? Why EnMed? And then what is EnMed? And how does EnMed address the particular goal? And Roberta hit on it. She talked about having substantial changes in how we deliver health and well-being to people in the future. And indeed, that is the fundamental driver. If you think about it, by and large, most of us are born healthy. And you're healthy for most of your life. And then disease creeps in, and as you age, it really creeps in. Well, it doesn't have to be that way. Why? Why do we accept that? Why do we accept that disease is an inevitability? I think we have the opportunity to provide good health through the entirety of our lives, from the time that you're born until the time that you die. That's the overarching vision. So goal one would be to have good health for the entirety of your life. And goal two would be to extend that life. So the National Academy of Medicine, for example, summarizes this with two words, healthy longevity. Healthy longevity is what we're all after. To achieve that, you know, going back to the initial question that you asked, requires technological innovation. If you think about where we are now, and the prevalence of disease as a part of our lives and our expectations, and where we would like to be, health, good health through the entirety of your life, you just cannot possibly get there without technological innovation. So when you see that as an overarching goal, and you think about what profession in our society solves problems for the benefit of society, it's engineering. That's what engineers do. They solve problems, it's that simple, for the benefit of society. And medicine is replete with challenges and problems. So converging these two just makes good logical sense. That is the way to get us to where we would like to be. Healthy longevity, bringing engineering and medicine in a blended fashion, not just an engineer who learns to do medicine or a physician who learns to do engineering, which is basically what has happened up until this point in time, we have this concept of actually converging the two, so that in the same mind, in the same brain set, and I see a number of our in-med students in the audience now, what we're trying to do is to train a new type of intellect, a new type of thinking, a new type of understanding, an individual who recognizes not only that disease exists, but the mechanisms that are a part of that disease, the mechanisms that give rise to that disease. And when you have that kind of understanding, then you're better able to ideate and come up with concepts and ideas about how to solve the problem. The individual who is conversed in this way, an engineer who understands medicine in this blended fashion, is what we call a physicianeer. The physicianeer then will be purposely trained to be a problem-solving physician, the physicianeer. An innovation-centric person, an innovation-centric doctor. That is a physician there, and that's what we're training. And we are unique in all the world in this.
I think one of the major challenges within innovation in any field is workforce development. And so that's the solution you're providing. So before we get into anything else, I want to talk about the topic at hand for this panel is, you know, what is the state of healthcare innovation in Houston today? Roberta, would you like to start?
Yeah, you know, I think Houston has lagged behind a whole lot of cities in kind of putting ourselves on the map in terms of healthcare innovation. And that's really sad, given the amount of healthcare that there is in this city. We shouldn't have necessarily been behind, but we were. But at the same time, is quickly putting itself on the map. So given this complex, given the ION, given tech rodeos, given, you know, everything you're doing, and thank you, you know, to your organization, right, continuing to cover it and continuing to put it out there is starting to put us in the place of, you know, starting to eke into San Francisco and Silicon Valley and Boston and New York. Now, I will tell you, we lag behind for a few reasons. Number one, and this is kind of quickly starting to catch up, which is venture funding. People follow the money. You know, there's no doubt that where the money is, companies come to. So oftentimes we'll incubate a company and then they move out to Silicon Valley to follow the money, right? So the more you have HMX funds going out, Ignite, which exists and is happening over the next couple of nights for women and women's companies, the more that you have different funding mechanisms that crop up and companies who say to venture companies, I want it, but I want to stay in Houston. You're going to hear from some of them on the next panel. Some of the ones that I insanely admire and some of the people who have started them, the more that I think we will grow this ecosystem. And Med, other organizations are key pieces, and we need to continue to grow this puzzle. The other part of growing this ecosystem is growing the labor force, right? So when you look at it, it is essential that we drive places like University of Houston, Houston Community College, St. Thomas, Houston, you know, Houston Baptist, like every organization that exists, we need to drive them towards a labor that wants to work in this space and stay in the city of Houston, right? And build it here. And not say, ooh, that's somewhere else. Like, I need to move to make that happen. This is an incredible city. It's a very livable city. It's a great quality of life for the price that it is, right? So we should be attracting a whole lot more students that are moving out to Silicon Valley. And we need to create that work, live, have fun spaces that exist to get people to build it here. And then I think it just builds on itself.
Dr. Pettigrew, how would you describe the state of healthcare innovation in Houston these days?
Well, you know, I really take my cue here from Roberta because I've only been here for 4 years. And I think she's been here a bit longer. But from my perspective, the first time I came to the Texas Medical Center, I was actually a director of the institute at the NIH. And one of our major grantees was located here. That grantee had a very forward-looking, forward-thinking project. It was to develop a regenerative medicine approach to stroke, which would result in restoring function to an individual who had suffered a stroke. And so the idea was to create an intact neurovascular construct that you could actually implant in the stroked out region of the brain and have it regrow, regenerate, and restore function. That is still a goal and a far-reaching idea, but that sort of gig and bowl idea brought me into the Texas Medical Center, and I was amazed at the constellation of entities here involved in the healthcare sector, in the healthcare arena. That really stuck with me. So when I subsequently learned about this in-the-air concept and the opportunity to come here and to help develop it, in fact, to lead it, it was quite appealing because I recognized all of the potential here. And I agree with Roberta that the potential has not quite yet been realized, you know, and that what we could do hasn't quite reached the potential that is there. To have the level of resources that we have here in the medical arena and also in the educational arena, you have the key ingredients to really move the world, to make a big difference, not just in this region and in this state, but across the planet. And that's, I think, the vision that we should have. That is the vision that we do have in med, and that's what I think about. Looking at the comparators, you think of the two Bay Areas, San Francisco Bay Area and the Boston Bay Area, which are the ones that are major leaders. And part of my educational background was in the Boston Bay Area, so I'm directly familiar with that. But those places, both of them, have these two key elements that we have here. They have an educational substrate. We have that here. Look at all of these bright young minds sitting out in the audience now. We have major universities, and that's what they have. And then they have nationally ranked and regarded health and hospital and medical resources and facilities. And we have those here. We've got those two key things. We also have, you know, other things. We've got NASA down the street and the oil industry. You mentioned your head of vascular surgery, Alan, who I saw earlier, who has this creative entity called Pumps and Pipes, where the analogies between two very distinctly different industries, when you look at them remotely, but fundamentally are very similar because they're both after engineering precision and targeting and reaching a goal with precision. And bringing those two together to learn from each other, I think, is very forward-thinking and inspiring. So there's a lot of potential in Houston, tremendous potential in Houston. The concept of the third coast to go along with the other two coasts, the Bay Area in Boston, lived in the Bay Area, in San Francisco. I think it's a very viable concept to develop this, you know, as another Silicon Coast.
So you spoke a lot about the potential of Houston, both of you, and we've talked about the present now, but I wonder what y'all think we're going to be talking about in 5 and 10 years, what the conversation's going to be. I know there's going to be new buildings directly next to us right now within that time. So, Roberta, what do you think Houston will be, what level do you think Houston will be at in its progression as a major city for innovation within healthcare in 5 and 10 years?
You know, when I look at, let me take the question from two different places. I'm going to take it from where do I think Houston will be and where do I think the state of innovation will be, if that's okay. And you know, Houston, again, has all of the potential elements. We need to continue to attract more money down here so that the companies stay. I mean, I think that is very key. And we need to get more institutions. And I say this with a healthy degree of a little bit of speaking out of both sides of my mouth, because it's very hard. One of the things that other institutions do really well, and we're at best in our infancy at Houston Methodist, but I think MD Anderson probably is the furthest along in this. We need to continue to get academic institutions to not only build the technology and license the technology, but spin off the companies. And they do that exceedingly well, I think, in California and Boston and New York. It's just they're a little bit further along in that. But we need to continue to spin out more companies and get those entrepreneurs and get them to stay, right? Now, I will tell you, Zoom and things like that and remote work has helped us. It used to be that you had to move to do these companies, and now you no longer have to move. So I think that right now our potential is greater. Like, the time is right now to continue to stoke that fire. Now the question is then, if that, and this is where we come from, we kind of dot the universe of opportunities, because the ones Dr. Pettigrew is talking about are going to be a little bit different than the ones, and they're both incredible opportunities, which is what is kind of that landscape going to look like, and where do I think the opportunities are? As I said, I think that in big data, we are at our infancy at best. Everyone's playing in it, and everyone can pretend that they have achieved it. I can tell you that no one has, because where we're talking about is moving from getting the data to understanding the data to being able to use what the data tells us to predict the future. So that is the key question of, are you gonna have a heart attack tomorrow, as opposed to, let me tell you, you just had a heart attack, right? Or I can tell you in like on near real time that it's happening, right? That is where we are today. Where we're going to be is, let me tell you what's going to happen over the next day, the next month, the next year. And that's happening if you look at it in the world of genetics, and it's happening in the world of digital technologies. So, you know, we are, I think there's huge opportunity. I think remote monitoring is at its infancy. And I'm looking at products now that some of the beautiful engineers are creating around the country, and am blown away. I mean, blown away by the fact that I think in the next year, I'll be able to slap a biosensor on anybody coming to the facility and switch it to a disposable when they go home, and basically monitor major aspects of their health up to and including EKGs, you know, all types of things in a much more sophisticated manner. That means that we are talking about remote monitoring centers in healthcare that are at their infancy. Today, monitor virtual ICUs, and they are sophisticated. I mean, God bless. I mean, you're going to hear from MIC Sick Bay. God bless them. I mean, honestly, survival of COVID and how well we did in COVID is all thanks to some of the forward thinking of those people who knew that we could get there. But I think your world of remote monitoring is, in 2 to 3 years, is a whole lot different than it is today. You're going to be going home. You're going to leave the hospital and still be tethered to a hospital. We can get you out sooner, and we'll biosensor you to death. Now, those of you engineers who are going to create those biosensors, what we're seeing now is 2 years ago, I looked at them and it was going to be $100 to slap somebody on with one of these things, you know, and it was going to be disposable in 7 days, and that was all the battery life was going to be. Now I can slap one on, it'll be $60 a month, and it'll last for the whole month without a new battery change, right? That's where we're moving, and that's where we're seeing that you know, creation leading to the disruption. And that's, so when I say what I think it will be, with that level of change comes a huge level of opportunity, because the people who have created things are about to be completely disrupted. And I encourage you, right, to be one of those people to disrupt the people who think they're going to own the market but are not, because some of them are staying stable and lazy where they are and not saying what's the next generation. So there's a lot of opportunity to even disrupt the disruptors.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, you touched on both aspects of it. There's these new exciting technologies as they develop and the impact they can make. And then there's the next phase and the evolution of that technology, which just keeps getting better and better and cheaper and easier to use. So Dr. Pettigrew, what's your take on this?
Well, similar to Roberta, I'd like to answer this at two levels. The first is a higher overarching level, and then some more specifics. So 5 or 10 years, 15 years down the line, we should see an acceleration in the generation and production of technologies coming from this area, from the center. And there will play a substantial role in that in collaboration with Houston Methodist, so that this region does become a bit of a third Silicon focus area in Silicon Valley. We are poised to do this. This is now recognized as considerable, of having that potential, having considerable possibilities there. And with things like the Tech Rodeo bringing attention to the capabilities that we have, the vision that we have, and the work that we're doing now in there to achieve that is certainly helpful. And I think that getting this word out will help attract some of the funding that Roberta talked about, because we are training the students to think about this, not only training them to think about it, but they are. They're producing. Our students now, just in the first year, are generating intellectual property and having ideas and concepts. Some of them arrive with ideas for companies. A couple of them already have started companies. I see two in the audience right now who've already started companies. And that will continue. I've, you know, been really impressed by how quickly they come up with ideas that are solutions to problems that are quite viable and have the potential for commercialization. So I think that we are certainly poised to accelerate the production of translatable technologies that will impact human health care globally. That's one, and that will continue to accelerate over the next several years. Not only because we have this training center here and we're focused on it, but in part because of what Roberta is talking about, that we're on the cusp of a tremendous acceleration in information, data analysis, using that data in a way that it informs us, using that data in a way that you get bigger and better ideas about how to solve problems. I agree with her wholeheartedly that we're just beginning when it comes to data and data science. This past year, Science Magazine, which we're all familiar with, one of the major scientific journals globally, had as its breakthrough of the year, and each year they announce a breakthrough of the year. Well, this past year, the breakthrough of the year was using artificial intelligence to take the sequence of amino acids that produce a protein and predict, just from the sequence of amino acids, what the conformation, what the actual shape of that protein will be. And that kind of information is so critical. It's critical for drug design. It's critical for understanding how various biological processes happen in the human body. An example right now is coronavirus, the spike protein, developing an antibody to it, developing an antibody that would be effective for variations of the spike protein requires understanding the structure and the content and construct. So being able to predict that and extract that kind of information with artificial intelligence in this digital age and data that's emerging is tremendous, and this will grow. Now, I'm old enough to have grown up with Star Trek. And people in the audience, most of the young folks, have heard about it, but they didn't see Bones McCoy, who was a doctor on Star Trek, and he had this tricorder. And whenever anybody would get sick on Starship Enterprise, Bones would just pull out his tricorder and wand it over them and tell you, one, exactly what was wrong with it, and then two, he would fix it. It would do both of those things. So that was an early concept of what we call now a theranostic, a combination of therapy and diagnostics, those two words put together. And I think that's where we're headed. We're headed to this age of molecular theranostics, in addition to mining digital data and data science. And you know, I just really look forward to that. It's the students that we're training today that will realize this type of a vision that we have. We're already beginning to make those kinds of steps. But the potential to do that, another word I keep going back to, will accelerate consequent to being in this hyper-connected world that we're in now, where we share information and data almost instantly, so quickly, across the globe. If somebody on, 7,000 miles from here discovers something, we'll know about it the next day. And that just didn't happen when I was a kid. I speak for myself, not you, but that just didn't happen then. And now it is. The doubling time for information is mind-blowing. 30 years ago, the doubling time for information was in decades. Now it's in days. We've gone from decades to days, just a doubling time in my lifetime. And by the time these students graduate and go out into their careers, maybe even before, it'll be in hours. And so that means that we have the wherewithal to really innovate and problem solve in an accelerated pace.
When sci-fi reaches up, or when reality reaches catches up with sci-fi, I think it's a really exciting time, right, Roberta?
Well, this thing here,
yeah.
I could take a call on it, and I remember when I was like a preteen, there was this cartoon character called Dick Tracy. And Dick Tracy had a watch, and he used to call Dick, for those of you who don't know, Dick Tracy was a cartoon detective. So on his watch, this was like in the 1970s, 60s, it was ancient for you guys, 1970s. But Dick Tracy would, in his cartoon, would talk to his colleagues on his watch. And that was sheer fantasy, but now it's a reality. And I think in the future, these things like the tricorders and molecular theranostics will become a reality. One day, there will be those who will look back and say, can you believe that in the 21st century, they actually used to cut people open? How barbaric that was. They used to cut them open. How did they survive that? So we'll get there. We're steadily progressing there. Methodist has minimally invasive conference and activity. So we're going from highly invasive surgery to minimally invasive image-guided surgery as a step in that direction. And we will progress. It will become less and less minimally invasive. And for one of the things, again, Rebecca pointed to it, having the kind of in-home monitoring of your health status and having that information communicated to you and to your physician, to you, so that you can become a part of your health care maintenance system and not simply wait until your annual visit to the doctor. You get feedback in your home. You'll walk through your home and your stereo will start playing a different kind of music when there is something happening in you that is early on abnormal. This is the kind of thing. Or you'll have a light bulb that emits a different frequency of light to stimulate serotonin, to lift your mood when you're getting depressed, or detects that your rate of movement is just a little bit off and you're not quite as spry as you used to be. You probably need to go and see someone about that. Mm-hmm. Those are the kinds of things that will happen. Or with AI and artificial intelligence and underserved populations, you'll have autonomously driven automobiles that go and pick up a person and take that person and deliver that person to the physician and return that person. Those are the kinds of things we're looking for in the future.
Right, yeah. Very exciting to see where everything is going. We do have to wrap up. We have run out of time, but Roberta, any last thoughts to this conversation?
You know, I was going to play off of that. You guys have a really fun one, and I would encourage you, if you haven't played, Stuart Kaur is going to be demonstrating a lot of the virtual reality outside. That also, when you look at disruptions, has the potential to change education. And it really has the potential, if you think about it, we are severely lacking. Everyone knows it right now, right? I don't have enough nurses. We don't have enough techs. We don't have enough respiratory therapists. I mean, we are going to have to train them very quickly to have an industry to take care of all of the things that need to be taken care of. Changing the way we do education is going to be critical. And it is going to be necessary. And really looking at the fact of, do you need to go into a live surgery suite to get that level of education and 200 surgeries before you begin? Or are you going to be able to do it by practicing in a virtual reality metaverse? And Sarah Pletcher, who's over here, introduced me to teleproctoring. Do I need to be an expert before I walk in the room? Or do I need to have access to a button, right? The Google of, hey, you know, I mean, my God, Alexas are all over my house at this point. My kids don't feel the need to know anything. They can just ask Alexa. She'll tell you anything. Right? The level of give me help. Do I need to know everything before I go? Or do I need to now have access to the sources to give me that information and I can get started quicker or in a more, in a different way than I've done it in the past, kind of. And so I would encourage you to play around with those kind of things. Keep bringing the ideas. Keep not being stopped, because it is the innovators that are sitting out here in the audience, right? I'm the motivator. I'm not the idea person, right? I motivate and stimulate ideas and then report on them and kind of give ideas for the Dick Tracy of the future, and I'll continue to get all of my ideas from cartoons. I think that would be like that, and because it really did have some futuristic things, aside from Linus. I'm not really sure that's going to give me much. But as we really do it, I hope what you're hearing from us is excitement for the future and enthusiasm for the future and a huge plethora of opportunities that are out there for you to take a hold of and create, and doing it here in this city would be fabulous. And I look forward to watching what you all do.
Awesome. Well, thank you both so much for your time today. This was, I'm excited. I'm enthused. So I hope everyone else is, and stick around for the rest of this morning's panels and presentations. Dr. Pettiger?
Yeah, I just want to make one comment to the young people in the audience. Don't ever really consider anything impossible. because history has taught us that striving for the impossible is a necessary precondition for achieving the possible.
Thank you again.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition, and check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.